Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark of PremierLeague.com and Miguel Delaney of The Independent. I know the talk is of windfalls and transfer war chests, but there's still one game to play, the biggest of the lot. Juventus, champions of Italy, against Real Madrid, champions of Spain, in Cardiff on Saturday night. I think we're going to have a final worthy of the hype.
I hope so. I think it's a classic final between the two best sides in Europe this season. Juventus are tactically fantastic under Allegri. I've been really impressed. I've watched a lot of their games en route to Cardiff, and I think they're an outstanding team. And Real Madrid, although they've frustrated me throughout a lot of this season, both in La Liga and in the Champions League, they've put in so many poor performances, Real Madrid, but they've got the talent. They've got so many individuals that can just sprinkle a little bit of stardust at a crucial moment of the game. And that is why they're in the final. It's because they've got players that can just change a game in a flash. I think this is a really fascinating matchup. I'm not sure it's going to be a thriller, but it will certainly be interesting.
There's a real sense, Miguel, that there's a generation awaiting its destiny here. You know, Juventus, you know, with Buffon and Cellini and those storied legendary players. Is this their time?
Yeah, exactly. I suppose the fact that they've kind of had so many titles in a row now as well, that they've finally grown to this moment, and having also had the defeated final 2 years ago against Barcelona, now they're maybe mentally ready to win it. I think, I'd say probably 51% in favour of Juventus to win it, I think. But Real Madrid, just tell me what Adrian was saying there. I was at their two last knockout games at home. Actually, I was at three of the last knockout games. I was at the Bayern home leg and the two legs against Atletico Madrid. And you're right, I mean, they're a very frustrating team in the sense you always look at them and think they should be so much better than they are. But yet then they still pull it off. And I think to a certain degree, they almost kind of defy a lot of football logistics because, well, or maybe prove the ultimate football logistic that they've got so much money and they're so big that they've almost created a squad that has a critical mass of quality. Yeah. So no matter what's happening, they just have enough to like, I mean, when you think that someone like Tony Cruz isn't even one of maybe the top four players in the team, or that they can miss Gareth Bale or James, the most expensive players in the world, and it doesn't affect them in the slightest. But I mean, even kind of, and beyond that, you kind of wonder, like, what's Zidane's big idea as a manager? Like, I remember at a mix zone last year, kind of, we were asking the players, like, so what's actually so good about him? And none of them could actually really explain it. They kind of just went on about their aura. But to be fair to him, I suppose he did make some good decisions, particularly against Atletico and Bayern.
Yeah.
And you just, because of all that, even though it's almost illogical, but you kind of, you still, Real, they'll still do something to pull it off. Yeah. Straight Juventus.
Yeah, but how do Juve cope with Ronaldo, and the way that they flood forward?
Well, they defend brilliantly as a team, Juventus. Yeah. It's as simple as that. The organisation of Allegri is outstanding. It's, they've got so many grisly defenders that they've got so much nous and intelligence that I'm pretty confident, actually, they'll be able to shut off the supply line as best they can. The thing is about stopping Ronaldo is that a lot of teams have stopped him. He doesn't really have that many touches on the ball compared to in previous years when he was potentially at his peak. It's strange to talk of him being over the hill. He's still been brilliant this season. But Ronaldo, I don't expect to dominate this final. I think he'll be very much on the periphery of the game. It simply boils down to the fact that key moments, will Juventus get tight enough to him in the box? Well, because he's just got that talent.
It was both of their home games against Bayern and Atletico. He actually, he didn't dominate, in terms of general play, he didn't dominate the game at all. But yet he rightfully dominates all discussion in the game because he scored a hat-trick in both of them. And he suddenly appears out of nowhere. And
is he the footballer's footballer? You know, you talk to footballers about, you know, the great players, and I always get the sense that players themselves are more in awe of what Ronaldo has done than what Messi does.
Particularly young players, actually, I've noticed. If you talk to a lot of young players these days, they all seem in awe of Ronaldo. And I do wonder a bit, maybe this isn't faint praise, but I think this is possibly true, that a lot of players see Ronaldo and think how he's made himself just through exceptional hard work and something beyond what maybe he should be. Well, you know, even though he's still got brilliant talent, but there's still kind of an element of kind of making himself, whereas Messi almost has kind of what feels a supernatural ability that can't possibly be recreated.
Yeah, he's a flag bearer, isn't he, for young players that maybe aren't as, well, no one's as gifted as Lionel Messi, are they? That's a fact. And he has made the best of himself and so much more, Cristiano Ronaldo. What a player. And it is through dedication, hard work, complete focus on the job. It's going to be fascinating because Juventus, for my money, are a far superior team to Real Madrid. As a team, they're miles ahead. They've got a tactical philosophy. They're very flexible. We don't know how Allegri will line his team up. They could line up for a flat back 4-3 at the back. They can play any number of systems, but they will be fine-tuned. They will have a plan in their head, and under, you know, a coach like Allegri, they're highly likely to deliver it. It is simply a case of the best team against the best collection of individuals, which will prevail.
But you've got that sort of contrast, if you like. If you look at that Juventus defence, you've got the hitmen. And then you've got someone like Dani Alves, who's basically, you know, he should turn up in a clown car, which explodes as he goes on the pitch. It was interesting to see that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has been studying how he's been playing. And you've got that contrast, or you know, the comparison to be made on Saturday night between Dani Alves and Marcelo. Similar players. That's going to be a subplot within the big picture, isn't it?
Yeah, that's another one. I mean, Marcelo's actually probably been one of Madrid's, again, for all the stars they have, their full-back, even though that's probably not a fair way to describe him, given what he does. But he's probably one of their best players, and actually one of the most important players in terms of how he attacks as well, just because the kind of the wit he gives them, the way he dribbles, actually, they kind of open a pitch and kind of an open opposition teams. But yeah, he's been supreme. So he's kind of different to Alves in the sense that there's probably more kind of technical ability or more creativity, whereas Alves is more kind of power running and then... Would you not say so?
Yeah, yeah. I love the joy that Alves...
Alves is spontaneously brilliant, isn't he? He can just produce these moments where you think, wow, he's a fullback. How's that happened? I love watching him. I love watching Marcelo. Marcelo, I've always thought, was not a great defender, but this year, actually, he's proved me wrong a bit. I think he has delivered. He stepped up. You could argue he's been their best player this season. That, what a battle that's going to be, actually, Marcelo against against Dani Alves down that side. I'd find it hard to pick a winner. I do think if Real Madrid are to prevail in this game, they'll need Marcelo to have an outstanding match.
What about Buffon? Yeah, he'll be there'll be a tide of sentimentality towards him because of who he is. Put him into some sort of historic perspective. Is he the best goalkeeper ever?
Big question,
isn't it?
From a personal perspective, I think the most spectacular keeper I've ever seen was probably Schmeichel. And Buffon's pulled off some great saves. There was something almost kind of with Schmeichel. There were so many improbable saves. I mean, the way he'd come out for one on ones was just so completely dumb. Well, maybe it's almost kind of to Buffon's testament that it's almost more, his quality's more understated.
Yeah.
And I mean, you often hear goalkeepers say it, that he just or it's similar to defenders, I suppose, that it's because of how he knows to initially put his body, that he doesn't look like he's going to get caught out.
Yeah, he stayed at the top, hasn't he, Buffon, for so long now. He would have to be in the top three, sure. But it's Schmeichel. In my opinion, Schmeichel was just a machine of a keeper and the best I've ever seen. So I'd put Schmeichel above Buffon, but for longevity, I think Buffon deserves a lot of credit. And yeah, I don't think anybody would begrudge him a Champions League winner's medal.
Another in the line of kind of these very, very long-serving Italian goalkeepers. Zoff, what, he won a World Cup of 40.
Yeah.
There's been a fair few as well.
They're quite well protected, mind, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's look at the other end of the age scale, Dybala. Is it inevitable that someone like that would go to a Real Madrid after Juventus, maybe even the next year or so, because of, as you talked about earlier on, They've got the money, they've got the relentless ambition. They usually get who they want.
Well, I think it would actually be something of a shame if he did, because I think European football, at a point, is you had so much money, and given the fact that this is, I mean, this was finally a season where kind of where only one of the traditional of the recent massive three, Barca, Bayern, and Real, were in the semis. I mean, I think for most of the last 7 years, three of them have been in the semis, so they kind of had a domination of it. So it would be quite a shame if, just as we have kind of another necessary kind of power rising, one of their best players is taken away again, even though Juventus has made a virtue of basically selling off. I mean, look what's happened the last year with Pogba and that. But at the same time, I think Dybala has to be massive friends with Leo Messi and they WhatsApp all the time. But beyond that, I think Juventus have been very effective and successful in building kind of... building up the club in the eyes of Dybala. I mean, I remember hearing the story about how when they first signed for them, which was when they last qualified for the Champions League final, and they brought him on the plane back, and it was one of the old Juventus, I can't remember who exactly it was, but they were all kind of said, when the senior players said to them, right, you stay with this club now and make sure you win with us the next time. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like, it was kind of to show them, this is what this club is about. And even though they lost that final, it was more to kind of build, Juventus are here to stay again.
Like the dynasty.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really impressed with what's happened at Juventus. How many times have they bought players on the cheap and reignited their careers as well? I mean, Pogba is a great example. We've seen it with a number of players. Danny Alves, I mean, they got him at a time when Barca weren't that bothered about keeping him. So Juventus have been pretty smart. Higuain, I think, was a terrific signing. The problem Dybala, or the problem they've got in keeping a player like Dybala, is the competition in Serie A.
Yeah.
There's just not really stiff enough competition to keep the interest. So they need to win this final to keep hold of players like him.
Oh, that could show. I mean, Inter, I suppose, if they get through their initial kind of FFP requirements, they could have huge money again to spend. So it could kind of tilt things in Italy once more.
It would be brilliant, wouldn't it, I think, to have AC Milan, Inter. Roma are pretty strong. I know there's just their managers just left. Napoli are still decent. They're hanging in there.
So Juventus are level. But to go back even to Juventus, even in this context, kind of how big clubs operate, it's amazing. I mean, obviously, it's a different kind of ownership to, well, some of the controversy they had about 20 years ago. But even 20 years ago, when they had that team that got to three European finals in a row, they made a virtue of selling their best players and rebuilding. I think, immediately after winning 96, they sold Vialli and Ravanelli. Next year, they kind of changed their forward line again with Inzaghi onto Vieri onto Inzaghi. And now they kind of do it in the same way. Yeah.
He's top-notch, Dybala. He would be worth an awful lot in the transfer market. I think his left foot... he's a hammer.
Yeah.
It is one of the best left foots in Europe, no doubt about that. And if he came to the Premier League, he'd be scoring 20, he'd be approaching 20 goals, he'd be into double figures in assists. He's really good.
But is the Premier League, for all its money, capable of attracting a young player like that?
Yeah, I think it is. Look, Man City have just signed Gabriel Jesus.
Bernardo Silva as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think the Premier League is still up there. It'll be interesting to see what happens. At the moment, you would still say that Real Madrid, Barca and Bayern Munich have got that power where they can get the true elite players ahead of the English clubs. But we've got so much cash and money talks, doesn't it? I do think that eventually that will come round and we will see the world's best players in the Premier League, if that's, which isn't really the case at the moment. I think we'll talk about it later on in the show, but you wouldn't put many of the Premier League's best 11 into the best of Europe 11 at the moment. I would expect that to change over the next 5 years.
Who would you, who stood out for you this season in the Champions League?
Well, I suppose Marcelo, I think maybe he's been player of the season. Timothy, I was at the Juventus Bayern or Barca return leg, and this is what we just touched on a few minutes ago. I think it really stands out. I think it is interesting how football comes full circle this way. But it's just the Juventus defenders that just had that love, that kind of the way they relish getting involved in challenges. I think since Guardiola's Barcelona, really, the trend in kind of defenders has been to try and develop ball players rather than ball winners. And we've seen so. And I think it's almost like it's become a little bit of a lost art. But, I mean, I suppose that's all that always happens in football. If something becomes a lost art, someone else does it. And it becomes so revolutionary again, everyone copies it. And there was almost an element that we invented against Barca, and just how there was no sense of this team folding.
It was a joy to watch a team relish defending.
Yeah.
It really was. I loved it.
Yeah. Barcelona, by the way, are already being quoted as favourites for next season's Champions League. New manager coming in, Valverde. I can't see that personally, can you?
Well, I suppose, to be fair, we probably would have said the same when Luis Enrique took over in 2014. And I think this could be the thing with Barca in general. Just kind of, they've got that block of players and they just kind of need almost kind of a mental refreshment every few years. And to be fair, actually, I mean, there were times in the last few months when I thought they were a much better side than Real.
Yeah. They just signed too many fillers, didn't they, last season? That was the problem. They didn't sign anybody to really improve their first 11. I think in central midfield, it needs a bit of a revamp moving forward. It's begun to look a little bit tired. But yeah, players of the Champions League, there's been a few, haven't there? Blimey.
The entire Monaco team.
Yeah, the entire Monaco. Yeah. I mean, Mbappe.
Which is going to be stripped bare, isn't it? Do we have to come to terms with that? Is that modern football?
We do, but the sad thing is it's happening quicker now than ever before. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like I think there were so many comparisons with them and the Ajax team in 95. But even that, for all we talk about it, they've got two Champions League finals out of them and actually won it. Mm. Nowadays, it feels like teams get one season and even at 2-3 years younger, and then it's immediately stripped bare.
So many of that team are going to be on the wanted list of everybody. The problem is at the moment, who can afford Kylian Mbappe? I mean, what a player he is. I mean,
Been a bit of 120 million.
Yeah, that's what he's worth though. I mean, potentially he's awesome, and I'm just massively impressed for someone of his age to make the runs that he makes. He's instinctively superb, intelligent. He's got the physical tools. He's going to score. He's going to plunder a record-breaking amount of goals. I think it's early days, but he looks the kind of player that's capable of maybe one day catching Ronaldo and Messi. It's going to take some effort, and that's a big statement, but I've been so impressed by him. I can imagine him scoring 30, 40 goals a season for a number of years. I mean, he's a teenager, isn't he?
When you put it that, to be that effective, that young, that's why he's worth that price, because you're investing. That's 7 years or so.
It is frightening. There's a lot of good, but Alexandro's impressed me a lot. Yeah. Juventus left-back Thiago Alcantara, I think he was brilliant.
That's for Barca need, of course.
Bayern Munich, he was superb. And Ronaldo, I think, it's hard to look too far past him and his goal output in the Champions League. So there's a number of contenders.
What about Ousmane Dembele at Dortmund, along with Pulisic, who's fantastic. Pulisic.
Yeah, and actually Dembele's goal this weekend was typically sensational. So maybe that's almost quite a slight disappointment with Dortmund this season. Their thunder was taken by the team that knocked them out, Monaco. That's obviously the circumstances around that game where should change the discussion about it with the attack. But I mean, because of what Monaco have done, it's easy to forget just how impressive Dortmund have been. And I suppose they're going to change manager now. I think the news has come out today that Tuchel is to leave. Possibly there could be other ripple effects from that.
Yeah. But yeah, Premier League.
You'd hope so. I'd like to see him here. Because there's a lot of stories about how the players eventually kind of grew. There was a bit of tension between himself,
out with the true scout as well.
And I think probably there's an undercurrent as well. They want to bring in the next bright young hope as a manager and upgrade. But even still, like, I mean, the football they've played over the past few years has been
great to watch. Yeah, I think Thomas Tuchel is definitely one of the planet's most impressive young coaches. But I don't know if he's ready for a massive. Well, okay, he is ready for a big job. Dortmund are a huge club, aren't they, in the Bundesliga? But I don't know.
Would he be a top six manager in England?
I don't know. I'm not totally sold on that. I think he has still got one or two question marks. I think defensively, Borussia Dortmund were quite poor at times. And they were making the same mistakes over and over. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the Tuchel, there is a big question over whether he can be good enough defensively at the highest level. No doubt he will produce teams that will play wonderful football and they'll be a joy to watch. But I don't know. I think his organisational skills, I'm not wholly sold on it yet.
Well, I think to go from Dortmund maybe to the next level of club, we probably need to actually. I mean, Dortmund very good to watch. Got in the Champions League, but they probably needed to kind of have that extra level of achievement to kind of make the jump up, rather than kind of just kind of keeping them good, but not really as kind of, I suppose, as impactful as they were on the club.
Well, we talked about Allegri earlier on. Allegri is at that level, and Tuchel's about here, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, if you're going to mention Allegri, many people would say he was the best tactical coach in the world at the moment, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. I think he's elite. He would certainly be in my top five, top three, perhaps, and if and when he does leave Juventus, they'll all want him.
But then the remarkable thing about Allegri as well is that when he got that job, his reputation was quite... I mean, do I think there's a lot of disappointment among Juventus fans when they got him? His reputation wasn't great because I suppose how things had ended up at, Milan. So, I mean, sometimes you feel you put too much stock in managers in that sense because of how, depending on the circumstances, how they reacted on the thing.
Yeah, what I've been impressed with Allegri is that his horses for courses approach. Yeah. He will change things very quickly during games. Not every manager, you get good coaches who can improve players, and I think he can do that. But the very best see things from the dugout, from the technical area, very quickly, and they're able to change and adapt. And he does that brilliantly.
What will he spot in terms of weaknesses with Real Madrid?
The main weaknesses with Real Madrid are without the ball, aren't they? Because I think they're a bit off the cuff, Real Madrid. That's the way they play. That's partly what makes them so good, but it's also fragility. I think if you play on Sergio Ramos, you put enough pressure on him, there will always be a mistake in Sergio Ramos. I think
set piece are going to be interesting. Like kind of warriors like Chiellini on Ramos, if they kind of mark on each other, going to be a bit of bite there.
Very much so. Yeah, I can pick a lot of holes in Real Madrid, but they make up for it with their brilliance. So it would be more about how Juve contain Real Madrid, how they nullify their star players, and then I do believe they've got the ability to scythe through them at key moments. And Higuain, he proved, I think, in the last round that he can deliver on the big stage. So he only needs half a chance. It's going to be a fascinating final.
You mentioned about almost like the cult of personality around modern managers or coaches. Jose Mourinho, give me your report card on him after the Europa League victory.
I still think, I can't get away from the idea that they should have challenged for the title. I think it was so built up towards the same applies for Guardiola, by the way. And a lot of this, I think it's an acceptable season now. You could call it qualified success. They qualified the Champions League, but at the start of the season, there's no escaping the fact that they wanted more than just qualifying the Champions League. They wanted more than kind of, I suppose, the third or fourth ranked trophies, or fourth or fifth ranked trophies in that way.
And by the way, do we count the community shield?
Absolutely not.
As a trophy.
Absolutely.
That was cringe, wasn't it? Yeah. The three-finger salute. I mean,
With Mourinho, is there an element of he's doing that because he knows it'll get people.
He knows that they were the two minor trophies. Look, it is an achievement, and he's gone from what I would describe as a D. No doubt about it in the Premier League. I don't care, but the unbeaten run was excellent in terms of stability, but they were dreadfully dull to watch at times. The finishing was poor, and it probably wouldn't take that much to turn a lot of those draws into victories, but it would be a D without those trophies. But the two trophies have to turn it into a B,
and it's a little bit too convenient to kind of say, we got our job in the end, we got the Champions League, and the league, you can forget about that because we did this. Well, no, the only reason you went for these trophies is because you failed in the main job of the league, and that was the thing about United season. It was kind of gradually as the months went on, the priorities kind of lessened and diminished.
The stats were really damning. I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was the fewest victories in a season since like 1990-91. I mean, that's Mourinho, who spent all that money on the Bundesliga's best player, the world's most expensive player, and Zlatan in terms of the funding of the wages. He's brought those three in, and he's got the fewest amount of wins. That's terrible. The fewest amount of goals home. It was the fewest home victories, or the least amount of times they sent their fans home happy this season in donkey's years in the whole Premier League era. There were a lot of disappointments, but the two trophies have sent the fans home happy.
Let's try and throw it forward, Migs, if we can. What time scale does Mourinho have to win the Champions League for Man United?
Well, I suppose the one thing is, actually, I think the Champions League could be easier for him to win than the league, just because of the fact that it's a knockout competition. He does have it, to be fair, he's got such a supreme record in knockout competition, as we've seen this season. And the Champions League competition, as vaunted as it is, and for all the prestige, and even, you know, it's the biggest trophy in football. If you get to the quarterfinals, it's relatively easy done for a wealthy club. Suddenly you need two good performances, and you could be on the brink of it. One lucky draw. And like we've seen over the past few years, I mean, like Chelsea won the Champions League, was probably their worst season out of the last decade, with their worst team of the last decade. Yeah. And that happens fairly, I think they're actually the same with Real Madrid in 2016, even though they've just kind of gone on to win the title. But I think it's going to be tougher for them to win the league, and although if you win the Champions League, they won't care in that sense. the one thing I'd say for Mourinho, I suppose, to be fair, I think there is a worry this year. I mean, the constant hope has been, well, he doesn't have the players yet to play in a kind of type of football he wants. But that was under Cup, by the way, against Ajax. Even when they could have, because I thought the first 20 minutes against Ajax, they were excellent. And this is a young team that could just trample all over. But then they retreated. Mm. And that kept happening in big games. And now, I suppose the argument with United is that once he gets his players in, that'll change. Although the fact they're playing someone like Ajax maybe is an argument against that. But for Mourinho, to be fair, every single job he's gone to, in that second summer, he's spotted, even if things have gone wrong in the future, that second summer, he's always spotted, he knows exactly what he has in the team. He's forensically improved them through kind of working the transfer market. Mm. And kind of suddenly, yeah, and you know, it's almost like he's got every little kind of ingredient.
Yeah, we've got to remember that there were a number of people, a lot of well-respected pundits, journalists, that were saying that Jose Mourinho was a busted flush earlier on in the season, weren't they? They were saying that he doesn't know how to deal with players. He went in at Old Trafford and upset a few people, and the results initially didn't go brilliantly.
And that impression was understandable.
You're objective at the time, and you say what you see. Yeah. And I understood why people were saying that. But I think he has actually, by virtue of the way that he's gone about winning those two trophies, especially in the Europa League, with tactical, tactical displays, I think he has nailed it. He has proved that he isn't a busted flush and that he can deal with players. But yeah, they're a long way off of winning the Premier League. They're miles away. Mm. I mean, defensively, not so. Going forward, he's got to score a whole bucket load more goals to stand any hope of winning the Premier League.
Mm. Let's look at Manchester City. Talk of £300 million, you know, the war chest that we talked about earlier. If that's the case, what's the point of spending £200 million on an academy?
It's
mad.
Well, it's almost like an academy is a flagship thing these days. And also,
nice changing rooms, nice pitches.
Yeah. and I suppose it's also kind of it's almost a side of the business in itself that you produce the players to a certain level. And like, to be fair, Real Madrid have done that for years. If you look, the likes of Juan Mata and Negredo all came through their system. Elsewhere. But I suppose that kind of proof. I mean, you have an academy, and it's almost like the point of the academy beyond that business sense is also to produce that one player every 10 years, and they're going to burst through, because that's what it takes at a top club now.
Yeah. Mm. And I suppose they'll make money out of selling these players a little bit like Chelsea. Chelsea's youth system's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah. They just don't really give the kids a go. It's interesting, wasn't it, that Guardiola has been offered a new deal. If reports of that are true, 3 years. I don't understand that. I think that sounds like a balmy idea, because on what basis? What has he done in that first season to justify a raise and more time, really? I thought it was a real big disappointment. Okay, they finished the season strong, and you can see where they're going, and you can see that he is probably the right man moving forwards, but he hasn't done enough to justify a new deal.
No, I'd agree. Yeah, I think that's been slightly disappointing. I mean, I think there have been times when City have actually played some of the best football in the league, and you can see the idea. It's some of the football's been electric, but yet still. Just like Mourinho, the fact that he didn't challenge him the title is an indictment. I think that's really poor. And even allowing for this whole argument that he doesn't have the players to play the proper Guardiola style, it has to be an element of compromise. I mean, some decisions were just bizarre. To play so gung ho against Leicester, right, you can argue all he wants about, well, you've got to make an idea stick, you've got to persevere with it. But that, you can still do that, but then compromise in certain games.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. He was very tunnel vision, focused on one method, and it was to the detriment of the team. Manchester City at the start of last season were electric. Mm. They were brilliant with and without the ball. The first 10 games, we all said they were title favourites. Mm. What went on after that was embarrassing. It was shambolic, really. And I think Guardiola was to blame for that. So I'm really surprised they've offered him a new deal, but I do think that he will learn from his mistakes.
But is that a reflection, Adrian, of modern football, where basically now clubs have got so much money, they buy a team rather than build a team?
Yeah, they do, and that will happen. But that's what Man City have been doing, isn't it, over the years. They bought their title-winning side, didn't they? And now they're rebuilding, and they're going to give Guardiola what he needs to deliver another title-winning side. And I wouldn't back against him doing it. But to win the title, he has to not neglect the defence, and he neglected it this year. It was really poor. Without the ball, Manchester City were weaker than so many other sides, and from the outside looking in, it didn't look as if he did a whole lot about it. Yeah. This summer he has to.
And I think the slight disappointment with both Guardiola and Mourinho in that sense is because it's interesting. If money is so big now, but all the clubs have this money, it kind of makes it an equal. It actually increases the importance of just pure coaching. Mm-hmm. And that was what's so impressive about Conte. I mean, he, every situation he took through the league season, every negative he took and turned it into a positive.
Yeah.
He took it and improved so many players. I think we might have expected a little bit more from that, from Mourinho and Guardiola.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Let's go through the players who've been linked or have signed for City already. Mm-hmm. Let's start off with the first batch of players who are coming out of Monaco. Mm. A lot of talk about, obviously, Bernardo Silva. Yeah. He is David Silva Mark II, yeah, isn't it? And you look at that, that's a typical Pep play. You've almost now got Pep and the Seven Dwarfs, haven't you? The little players.
His dream of 11, 5'8" playmakers.
Yeah, yeah. What sort of impact do you think he will make in the Premier League next season?
I think it'd be excellent. Yeah. I think it'd be one of those where immediately you've got to... By the second game of the season, you're always like, do you see what he's already done? He did be kind of a moment of magic.
He was the man of the match in the match of the season, wasn't he, that Champions League title?
Yeah, exactly. The one thing about it, though, actually, they're both obviously individually excellent players, but I think what was so great about Monaco was the way Mbappe and Silva actually enhanced each other. The amount of times, I think, particularly in Champions League, we saw them try that move, Silva kind of curling in an arse ball, and Mbappe using Mbappe's run. Mm.
Yes, that's true. He's a class player.
Could be Gabriel Jesus in the end of that.
They've got so many goals in them, so much creativity. They scored a lot of goals this season, Manchester City, so I expect them to... Yeah, beat that next year with the talent they've got. It's all about, in terms of winning stuff for Man City, it's all about what they do at the other end of the pitch. I do like the link with the left back Mendy. I think he would be quality for them, and Kyle Walker as well on the other side.
Looks pretty much nailed on.
They need two new fullbacks, and those two guys would be really powerful going forward, and good defenders as well.
What about the goalkeeper? It seems Ederson. It seems he's going to sign probably tomorrow. £40 million for a goalkeeper who's yet to win a full international cap.
Yeah.
Does that tell you where we are in the transfer market?
It's I suppose it tells a lot about kind of the very specifics of Pep's demands for goalkeeper. This guy seems to have the elements that would, particularly with his feet, that would suit Guardiola. But it's amazing the Bravo thing has kind of just been ripped up so readily, hasn't it?
Yeah.
No, I suppose that is quite decisive in that sense. But
he was fairly ruthless when he came to it, wasn't he? Yeah. He ditched him for Caballero when it just became too much. Mm. I mean, I can't quite believe how bad Bravo was, really. Didn't make any saves, did he? Almost every shot went through him.
Yeah. What's amazing about that as well? I mean, this is a guy that had a player who had such a distinguished career ahead of that. To suffer such a kind of humiliating campaign, look so out of sorts, it was actually amazing.
You'd maybe look at the staff behind the scenes, the goalkeeping coach. What happened there? He certainly didn't. He got gradually worse as the season went along. So yeah, look, we'll see. I haven't seen a great deal of Ederson, but he clearly fits the criteria, and I can actually see. The more I always, when I commentate on games, when I look at games, I always find it baffling that these modern managers take so many chances with the goalkeepers, passing it out from the back. But when you see it work, and when you see a keeper clip a ball into the front player, he knocks it off and they go and score a goal, you think, okay, I see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
So if he can...
I love those hooked clearances that they do.
Yeah, I do see the virtue of it. I still would argue that the risk to reward ratio is very, very low.
Well, I mean, the classic one, I suppose this is the fundamental Pep goalkeeper moment. Remember, when in the Classico, in I think December 2011, when Valdez had the ball out, and I think it was Benzema, another Real Madrid kind of player, just charged and really pressing.
Yeah.
Like the angle to make the pass almost non-existent, and he put it through both of them. And this is about after 9 minutes of the game.
When it works, it's brilliant. But I just wonder how many goals does a footballing goalkeeper genuinely set up?
Yeah.
And how many goals do you concede on the back of overplaying at the back? And City certainly didn't get the balance right last year.
What do you think will happen with Joe Hart? He's already said he's enjoyed Torino, but he won't be going back. Where will he end up in the Premier League?
It's an interesting one, I suppose. I mean, there's been a little bit of kind of manoeuvring to try and put him, if De Gea does leave United, to make that, although I think they're more interested in Jan Oblak. Mm-hmm. It's slightly different because there's no immediately obvious place. And he might have to kind of drop down.
Liverpool?
Potentially Liverpool, yeah.
I'm just not sold on Joe Hart at the moment. I don't actually know how good he is. I don't... He's had a few disappointments. months now, hasn't he, in his career? He's had a few setbacks on the big stage. He's mucked up for England. He's mucked up for City. He's been unwanted by a manager that's regarded as one of the best on the planet. He's taken a lot of knocks, Joe Hart. Yeah, yeah. It feels as if he might need to resurrect his career with a mid-table club and get a lot of practice, and maybe he can come back up. But we see with Jordan Pickford at Sunderland, actually, playing for a relegated team or a team near the bottom of the table can be one of the best things for a goalkeeper.
Well, he was in my team in the Premier League season. Yeah, I think he was in yours, wasn't he?
Yeah, so...
Actually, I think
I'd
get in the end.
Yeah, if Joe Hart wants to restore his reputation, I would actually almost point him towards a mid to lower Premier League team and say, go and make a whole bunch of saves and restore your reputation.
Mm. Looking further forward in a potential City team, Alexis Sanchez. Is that a realistic prospect?
I still think if he was to move to an English club, Chelsea would be likelier, but I can't see Arsenal countenancing that.
Mm. No chance.
Yeah, because from everything you hear about, kind of from people that know, from the few people actually that know Alexis quite well, London, he claims, is the best city he's ever lived in.
Right, good.
And he loves the anonymity of London, that London affords him. Because I think you wouldn't call him a recluse guy, but he likes his privacy.
For sure. Yeah, he's not the most sociable character.
And I think he realises that wouldn't be possible in a smaller city, particularly, like, I suppose, with Manchester, it could be a bit of a kind of goldfish bowl for him. Mm. Maybe the same with Munich and even Turin. So I think he wants to stay in London, but wants to stay at a winning project. It caused a few complications, this issue.
If Arsenal sell him to Chelsea or City, I just can't see it. The reaction to that from
they'd rather let him run his contract.
I would. Mm. And I know that sounds crazy, but I would rather lose 50 million than sell him to Chelsea or Manchester City. And I think most fans would. I think Bayern Munich is the most obvious route for him. But all is not lost. I'm, as a follower of Arsenal, someone that hopes they do well, I sincerely hope that they'll give him the money that he needs to stay, and they can keep him and Ozil and build.
In that perspective, Adrian, it seems what we're hearing today is that Wenger's going to sign the 2-year contract, a formal announcement, possibly tomorrow, Wednesday.
Okay.
If that's the case, in the context of the FA Cup final win, best move possible?
I think at this stage, yes, it is. I think it's just good to know one way or the other. I think Arsenal fans just want to know. Being in limbo hasn't really helped anybody. I think a lot of fans, and I see the argument, wouldn't have minded if Arsene Wenger had bowed out on such a high of winning the FA Cup. It would have been what a send-off that would have been. But the problem is that at this stage now, who would Arsenal turn to? It looks like Allegri has committed himself to Juventus. So look, if he is to stay, good. Let's rebuild that squad. I still think, despite the magnificent performance in the cup final and the nature of it, which I think was hugely encouraging, I still think the squad needs beefing up. I think there are big improvements to make. Four or five players to come out, four or five better players to come in, and more of a focus on the defensive side of the game. And I think Arsenal can do a lot better next season. I mean, 75 points actually wasn't too bad in terms of a points tally compared to recent seasons. So it wasn't as disastrous as a lot of people made out. But lessons have to be learned. And that cup final performance has to be the blueprint of the way Arsenal play moving forwards. Because when Arsenal marry physicality, aggression and teamwork with their obvious skill and movement, they're some team.
Mm. Give us a perspective, Miguel, about how Wenger reacted to that moment of, must have been supreme self-satisfaction at Wembley. Obviously, you saw him at close quarters in all the press duties and media stuff that he did. What was your sense of him?
Well, actually, the sense I got above anything, beyond kind of, I suppose, all the code and game playing with the politicking over his contract.
Yeah. Mm.
But you saw essentially why it's going to be very difficult for Wenger to ever leave, because it's just, I think he lives the game more than pretty much any other manager. Like, there was an interesting moment in our Monday's press conference where he'd been asked about his contract again. First of all, he goes, just let me enjoy the moment. Yeah. Can we please leave? But then he was kind of, so what does the FA Cup mean to you? And he kind of gestured out to the stadium and kind of said, Where in life do you get a moment like this? Do you get joy like this? And I think this is the thing. That's what it ultimately comes down to with Wenger. I think he's admitted himself that he doesn't have his horses like Alex Ferguson.
Yeah.
He doesn't have too many interests outside the game beyond kind of hard news and current affairs. So he kind of, he just lives and breathes football.
And I understand why he wants to stay. He wants to stay. He's in the job he loves.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't want anything else out of life. It boils down to the board and whether they, you know, have they been decisive enough in terms of getting that decision now down that you are staying or deciding to make the change. And I think the board have probably let it drag on a little bit too much on their side. But if it's sorted now, look, we move on. And providing lessons are learned, then I think Arsenal can improve.
Also, I think a big thing with him as well is, again, you got the sense of that on Saturday, but from hearing from people that know him, that he doesn't want the job out of kind of sentimentality or charity. He wants to stay on because they completely trust him and trust all his ideas. And it's kind of been interesting over the past few weeks. He's had a lot of public, slightly covert or coded digs about kind of things they've tried to bring in, like the discussion about director of football.
Yes.
After the Everton game, he went on one about the use of stats, kind of, well, maybe we won't have humans deciding anymore, we'll have robots.
He did, didn't he?
Because apparently there is just kind of been much more use kind of analytics at Arsenal.
Yeah.
So he wants a job, but on his terms.
Yeah. The switch to three at the back, I thought, was really timely because it felt as if he had to prove that I can change, that I am willing to do something different. And I don't even know whether he knew at the time how effective it would be or whether he was completely convinced about whether his players or team were suited to it. It's since proven that is definitely the case. I think they're very suited to three at the back. But it just felt, to me anyway, it felt like he had to do something, so he did. And now it's worked. It's put him in such a good, strong position with the board that now I suspect they believe him when he says, I'm going to do things a little bit differently moving forward.
We had the last Wembley showpiece, in club football anyway, on Monday. Huddersfield getting in on penalties after a dreadful game.
Yeah.
But let's look at that. You know, we've talked about money, you know, unlimited amounts of money in relation to the Premier League. They bought 11 players for £3.8 million and they're now in the Premier League. That's one heck of an achievement.
And even actually in this press conference after the game, Wagner made such a point going, our budget is less than 12 million. I didn't report a 12 million.
Okay.
So, I think it's going to be, it's more than ever because of the amount of money in the game. It's going to become the kind of the new defining quality of managers, I suppose, how much you can maximise resources. I think it's one reason at the other end of the scale, to be fair, but why. Okay, Pochettino hasn't won a trophy, but why his season has felt so satisfying and successful? Because really, Spurs shouldn't be able to finish second ahead of clubs that are so much wealthier. Although it's interesting, given all this money, that we have had a few little examples of that now, of managers that are kind of are defining, Wagner possibly the latest.
I get the sense that defeat will probably mean that Yapstam will move on from Reading.
Yeah, there have been a lot of whispers about Yapstam, haven't there, for a few months now. He's an ambitious guy. I think he's proven himself. Reading were nowhere near it last year, were they? Yeah. He's clearly an astute guy, good leader. He's got an aura about him. Defensively, he made Reading very solid. They just weren't good enough, were they, at the end of the day? I think Huddersfield had that little sprinkling of quality. Yeah, they're very dull to watch. But he will get a better job, I'm sure. And it'd be good to see. Yapstam, I remember interviewing him as a player, and he was a nice guy. Quite scary. Yeah. I would imagine that he would frighten a lot of players.
How about him and Sean Dyche in the same dressing room?
Look, it's a new breed of managers coming through. But he clearly knows what he's doing, because there was an average group of players and they were within a penalty kick of reaching the Premier League, which is a great effort.
Yeah. Newcastle, how do you see the dynamic between Rafa Benitez and Mike Ashley?
It's two men with danger. Yeah, it's two men with a significant history in this area, with a host of other people. Rafa with other, directors of football and owners. Mike Ashley with other managers. So
could go any day.
And at the same time, maybe it's kind of, you know, it's just the delicate chemistry. But I mean, somehow they're kind of they've managed to be a persevere through so far. I do wonder, though. I think Newcastle have successful seasons here. Rafa, for all the criticism he gets, for all the issues with him, he's still a fundamentally good manager.
Very good.
And a good man as well. Yeah. You know, the way he's still got that obvious affinity with Liverpool. I just think it's wonderful.
He wants to go back there, doesn't he? He'd love to go back, wouldn't he? No, it's good to have Rafa back in the Premier League. I do hope he sticks it out and that they can somehow make it work at, at Newcastle. If he's given half-decent funds, then I'm sure he'll get it right. I'm really impressed with the way he built the squad for the Championship. I know they sort of fell over the line to some degree, but yeah, he's a top manager. He probably deserves to be with a better team than Newcastle, but yeah, I wish they were.
I think they probably, you get that club singing, you've got a real
chance. Yeah, I think they'll be okay next year. Huddersfield, there's a lot of work to do for Brighton too.
What about Brighton? Because everyone will wish Chris Hughton well because he's a very popular guy, understandably, good guy.
The one slight worry, though, I think maybe this is a bit unfair, but you wonder is Hughton almost in that kind of Mick McCarthy, well, his old international team, with a trap of kind of being a manager who's excellent in the Championship, but once it comes to the Premier League, that maybe they're kind of lacking that little bit of extra. Because it's happened a few, although maybe that's unfair given what he did at Newcastle and how he kind of left there. But there has been a kind of, we saw it at Norwich.
They just have to get their expectations in proportion, don't they, Brighton? They will be in a relegation struggle. It'd be a miracle, I think, if they're not in a relegation struggle. And I just hope that they stick with him because Burnley did. When they struggled, they went down. Sean Dyche brought them back up and he's building something really, really special there. So he deserves a full season in the Premier League, even if they are really, in the bottom three.
And I suppose this is the thing now as well. It's almost like go up, get the experience of it, go back down, even if you, and then use it again and build.
Well, think of the money he's brought into the club by virtue of them taking it. I think he deserves, if they go down, it's still a success. The fact that he took them for that 1 year in there.
Yeah. So that's next season. We've still got, as we said right at the start of the show, one more game. Let's have some predictions.
I fancy Juventus. We all know about the Champions League winner's curse. No defended champion has defended the trophy. And I just feel that Juventus are tactically a smarter side, the better team. I think they'll edge this final 2-1 after extra time. I think Real Madrid will score, but 2-1 after extra time.
I completely agree with everything Adrian has said. But it's precisely because Real have so often defied logic that I'm just going to go with them. They'll do something. They get Ronaldo. He'll suddenly appear 78 minutes. There's the winner. Yeah. So I think I'll go 2-1 Real.
Juventus for me, probably the odd goal in three, and there won't be a dry eye in the house. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.